ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
The axiom in the investor community is never bet against Elon, because even if one has questions about his mental health, the simple message of the numbers of his companies are highly confidence creating.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find us on ABC Listen.
Well, it's that time of year to take stock of the stock exchange. Now, the ASX did see a record number of exchange-traded funds added to its board last year. So what explains this spike, and who is it that's actually utilising them? And while the value of Australian stocks did increase last financial year, it lags far behind the gains of some of the other global indexes. So we're going to have a look at trying to explain that gap. Welcome to ABC Business Daily. I'm Carrington Clark.
And I'm ABC business correspondent David Taylor.
David Taylor, thank you for joining us. And here we are into the next financial year. A lot of data gets crunched at the end of the financial year. And there are now people trying to work out exactly what the average superannuation return is going to be. I see Chant West came out suggesting it'll be 9.2%. A lot of people won't have those exact numbers yet. But I wanted to talk through first an article you've put up on the ABC website. And this is something that I think I noticed a sizable change in the time that from when I was here before I went overseas and when I've returned, and that is the rise of ETFs and how pervasive they are now. They're everywhere. A lot of people who you wouldn't expect are using them. And so you've tried to look into what is driving the huge number of them now on the ASX and whether or not it's a good thing to have this diversity. Is it a diversity? And yeah, what's driving it and who's now utilising them?
Yeah, all great questions, Carrington. The ASX, the Australian Securities Exchange, gave us the drop on this, obviously looking to spruik their wares as an attractive place for people to list securities. ETFs are securities. And what I mean by that simply is just to explain ETFs very briefly. You've got traditionally someone will go to a fund manager, and the fund manager has a team of researchers and a team of advisors. In one place, you hand over your ID, you hand over your details, you hand over money, and they manage that money for you. But, you know, separately from buying an individual stock, this managed fund will look at property, listed property, will look at a whole different range of shares, will look at fixed income, and provide you with a pool of investments packaged into one product. And that pool of investments will meet your risk appetite, will meet your, you know, financial planning needs. It's a very tight financial relationship. And you're with that managed fund for quite a while, and they expect you to offer up cash every quarter or whatever to build that investment. But there's a relationship there. ETFs essentially provide the exact same service, except all of that money is in one stock listed on the stock exchange. So when you buy a stock like, I'll just throw some examples at, obviously a big bank or a big miner, you're buying an individual stock. You're also buying an individual stock when you purchase an ETF. But within that stock, rather than it being a company, it's a managed fund. It's a little mini managed fund being traded on the stock exchange. Obviously, it's lower cost. And because a lot of this stuff is determined by mathematics and algorithms and all that sort of stuff, but it's a lower cost option, and you literally can go on your app and purchase it with a click of a button. So it's exploding because there's a whole generation of Australians that want access, easy access to what would otherwise be a very complicated managed fund process.
So I feel like most people know ETFs because of the big index hugging funds where you can buy an ETF that basically tracks one of the major indexes. Maybe it's the ASX 200 here in Australia. Maybe it's the S&P 500 over in the US, or it's NASDAQ composite or whatever. And the idea, the reason they are attractive to people is that you can get access to the returns of those markets just by buying one simple stock, and they are lower cost compared to traditional managers of money. And so many people suggest it's a much better bet for somebody who doesn't know much about the stock market to just buy the index, then try to beat it by going, trying to either place the stock market themselves, choose which stocks they want to buy, or to be trying to get an investment manager who's going to beat the market, because the numbers seem to suggest very strongly that most people aren't going to beat the market, and the fees that you'll be paying for somebody to actively manage your money are going to exceed any return you're getting anyway, so you're better off just buying it. Is that still how they're being utilized?
Yes, and it leads me on to the little phrase that's in the piece today, which is the dirty little secret of the active fund manager, which is basically that several advisors told us during the investigation of this story that an active fund manager will, as you mentioned, try to beat the market with specific stock selections. And the dirty little secret of the active funds management industry is that they've figured out that it's actually easier to follow the market, just like passive funds. So the passive funds do simply make sure that what's in their fund mirrors what's happening with the, let's say, the ASX 200, for example. So the active fund managers have gone, okay, well, if they're beating us, if we can't do better than that with our stock selection, if they're beating us, let's just do what they're doing, call it an active fund and charge the fees for it. And it's unfair, obviously, for people who are paying the money to an active fund when they're doing exactly what a passive fund would do. Now, the ETF market is essentially also mirroring what would happen in a passive index fund. So that's why you're getting this sort of comparison between ETFs, passive funds, and active funds. The active fund managers don't like the ETFs because in many ways they are mirroring what's going on in the market and there's no trading involved, so it's lower cost, there's no need for fees. So, yeah, it's tricky, but if you are keen to have a simple investment, and let's face it, not all of them are simple and not all of them are diversified and balanced, but most of them, from what the ASX has said, are. And if you are keen to have that sort of investment at a low cost, put your foot into the market, then what analysts are saying is that this is a low-cost option.
And do we know what these new dozens of ETFs that have listed on the ASX, what are they? And how are they different from the ones that were already listed?
They're not different from the ones that have already listed. They're all basically doing a whole range of things. We have some new ETFs that are specifically following AI on Wall Street. Now, obviously, not all stockbrokers give Australians access to the US, but some do. And some of the ETFs are tracking what's happening with Bitcoin. Some are tracking what's happening with AI. Some are tracking what's happening with the big miners. Some are tracking what's happening with what we call penny stocks, which is small cap stocks. So it is a wide variety of new ETFs. But the sheer fact that there are 72 new ETFs and in the financial year leading up to end of June 2025, there were only 50. Well, 50 is still a lot, but, 70.
It's still growing.
Yeah. And the ASX has told the ABC that it expects to keep growing, which I find fascinating.
I think most people would assume that the people utilizing them maybe are younger men, would be the stereotype of the people who are more actively out there, or maybe they're the ones who are more actively playing the stock market. Do we have any details about who actually is utilizing ETFs? Has it changed demographics?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's no gender breakdown, but there is an age breakdown, and it's 18 to 24-year-olds. So there are 550,000 Australians aged 18 to 24 that are invested in ETFs. So we're looking at Gen Z. And what's interesting is that there seems to be an appetite amongst Gen Z to take on this kind of risk because, and it is risky, you know, following the market in a passive fund is less risky than, say, following an active fund manager or a much more risky type of stock, like a small cap stock or something like that. But there's still an element of risk about it. But because it is so difficult for Gen Z to build up any kind of wealth for buying a house or, for example, like that, they are keen to do it. So I think what's happening here is a perfect storm where the generation that we're seeing here, 550,000 18 to 24-year-olds, there's a lot of Australians doing this, and it's expected to grow too. But they're seeing this as a way to build wealth as opposed to Gen X or, you know, another category, the boomers, for example, who we know are heavily invested in property. It seems to me like this has been sold or accepted due to having an app on your phone where you can just buy it with a click of a button. It seems to be accepted as a way to build wealth.
Yeah, and I think that's right. I think the technological improvements that we've seen, the ease with which people can now purchase ETFs makes it a pretty attractive option. And I think you kind of get a bit of a network effect, don't you? If people you know have done this, then it's much more likely that you will also do it because you've seen how they've interacted.
And the Reddit crowd. Do you remember the Reddit crowd with GameStop?
Exactly.
I'm not cool, right? I'm not on Reddit. In fact, I'm not on any kind of chat group with younger people.
That's good to know. If anyone sees a David Taylor popping up on these groups, it's not this David Taylor.
It's not this David Taylor.
Yeah, I think what's also happening is if it's a time when you're seeing huge results in terms of stock performances in the United States, people in Australia want to get access to that.
You want to get in on it.
And so this is a way for many people to play that market, which was, it used to be a lot harder, didn't it?
Of course
it did.
If you wanted
to get access to American stocks, it was harder, and I think it's become increasingly easy and people are just more aware of it.
Yeah, and it's kind of exciting, really, because you've got, you've got some analysts saying this is a bubble, be very, very careful. And you've got some analysts saying, look, this data center build out still got a long way to go. Companies like NVIDIA still have a long way to go. The earnings forecasts are starting to match the earnings productions. We still don't know what demand will be at the very end of the investment cycle. But, this is another industrial revolution. It's huge. And the fact that technology, as you say, can give you access to Wall Street at the click of a button is quite extraordinary. But yeah, I really wonder what people genuinely believe they're getting into when they're pressing that button, whether there's a high level of financial education and I know exactly what I'm doing, because I can't discount that amongst the younger generation. They're awfully bright, a lot of them. But, whether there are some people that just are on that Reddit crowd or some other, chat platform and just want to buy something up because everyone else is.
Yeah, I think financial literacy is obviously sometimes lacking into certain segments of the community, but I think it is, as you pointed out, it has been difficult for people to get into the property market. We've seen some cooling recently, but it's still very expensive. One of the attractions is that you can outlay a relatively small amount of money, but you're seeing that, hopefully compound over time, and that can help you to build that wealth. Let's go through some of the numbers that we did get last week to kind of compare how Australia sits. And I think this does help explain in part why we have seen people looking to ETFs, particularly to get access to technology and to overseas markets. So the Australian S&P 200, the ASX 200, was up 2.8%. Now, that is actually the worst performance in a financial year since 2021-22, where there was a 10.2% loss. Now, if you take into account dividends, total return was 6.1%, which is okay. But that's not okay when you compare it to what happened overseas. So the American S&P 500, it was up more than 20% over the same period. And the Nikkei 225 from Japan was up 73%. The Solkospi up 150%.
That's crazy.
I mean, these are extraordinary numbers. And you can understand if people see this, they might think, I want to get into some of that action. So in Australia, mining was our best performing sector, up 48%. Technology and health both down almost 40%. Now, that data seems quite extraordinary, but Australia is an odd market in that we have, particularly in technology and health, a few really big players. And so when they don't do well, that can drag down that whole group. So health, obviously, CSL has been going through a host of troubles. In technology, you've got the story of, say, WiseTech, but Atlassian's had points of pressure as well, people concerned about artificial intelligence and its ability to eat the lunch of these software as a service companies. And so that's why we've seen some pretty wild fluctuations. And again, the biggest issue for the Australian market compared to what we saw in South Korea and Japan and the United States is that they all have exposure to the artificial intelligence story in a real way. America obviously leads the way when it comes to the development of the technology. It also has NVIDIA. Seoul and Tokyo both have exposure to a lot of the companies that are building parts that are critical in that artificial intelligence transformation. And so that's why we're seeing these strong results. In saying that, there were points where we saw major sell-offs in both Japan and South Korea, particularly at the height of the war. And these are stock markets that are particularly sensitive to what happens in interest rates. So what do you think happens from here when it comes to the ETF story? Are we going to eventually reach a ceiling? Is there a way for active fund managers to compete and try to bring back some of this business? Or do you think the horse is effectively bolted when it comes to people understanding that they can get great returns depending on the year?
Carrington, I think it comes down to the market as a whole. And I think what you're going to find is that if we don't have some sort of share market correction or crash, and a correction is sort of from the peak of the market, 10%, a 10% or greater fall, and there's no definition for a crash, but it's something of the order of 20% or more, and that puts you into a bear market. So if we don't have something like that from here at some point, we are in a completely different capitalist economy, because it's been happening for hundreds of years, and why we would suddenly move to a market where that doesn't happen anymore and things just continually rise, well, that'd be a question for market economists. But it seems unlikely that that would be the case. So most stockbrokers and analysts at the ABC have spoken to have said there will be some sort of market downturn at some point. So the question is, why haven't we seen it? And is it due to the fact that, you know, there's this massive investment in AI and it's still got a long way to run? Well, that's perfectly legitimate. I'm going to get to the Australian market in a second, but just to continue on this point, what's been happening, and we talked about the Reddit crowd and we talked about younger Australians wanting to chase a stock and get involved. What we've seen for the past decade is that, or let's go back since the pandemic at least, is that when there is a fall in the market, a significant fall in the market, so anything between sort of 5 and 10%, even more, we find there is a cohort of investors, or an army of investors, that come in and buy the dip. So what does that mean? Well, when stocks fall heavily, there is an assumption among younger Australians, because they have not seen a major market crash, that all that dip means, all that correction means, is that you're getting something that would otherwise be more expensive. You're getting it cheaper. And you can see it in the data. I've seen the analysts' notes about this, that the graphs are just clear. Every time there is a significant correction, the army moves in to buy the dip. So the question is, and Michael McCarthy, the CEO of Moomoo, alluded to this late last week, that there will be a point where something happens. Maybe it's a big spike in interest rates or unexpectedly high inflation reading from the United States that will break that pattern. And that dip won't be bought up as much, or at least the institutions will get on top. So the big fund managers will get on top, and the market will move past that point, and then you will get a significant downturn. So going back to the point about ETFs, there is every expectation that because you looked at the VIX this morning, the volatility or the fear index on Wall Street, it's down around 15. There's just no fear in the market at the moment. So these earnings results on Wall Street, if they continue to push past expectations and the earnings match what the market is expecting, there is every expectation the market will keep on pushing higher and higher, and ETFs will follow. And that's very positive. But if the market does correct, ETFs will go with it. The only final point I will make is that there is what is happening on the Australian Stock Exchange at a micro level. It's even happening today, is that when there is a significant downturn, sometimes the Australian market goes with it, Carrington. Other times you'll find there is rotation. So investors move out of mining and into banks, or out of banks and into mining, or out of healthcare and into energy, or, you know, into energy and out of utilities or something like that. So there may be in the future some sort of idea where, when there is a major market downturn, rather than the whole Australian market falling and all ETFs falling, that there is a switch into some ETFs that are proving themselves and away from ETFs that aren't.
Yeah, I mean, the stock market returns, particularly in the US, have survived a war in the Middle East, the biggest interruption to the global supply of energy we've ever seen, potentially, and yet barely a blip. It's a fascinating ride to watch. It'll be interesting to see how the Australian market performs in the next year. We have had a few years now where we haven't risen anywhere near what we've seen in the United States. You know, for a long time, Australia was kind of tracking along pretty steadily with what was happening in the United States. There has been this major divergence. That would mean that you would think, be relatively insulated if there was a major downturn in sentiment when it comes to artificial intelligence, because we haven't had those gains. that might be some comfort, but I think it's a small comfort to those people who feel like they've missed out on big returns if they haven't been exposed to what's been happening overseas.
That's a good point.
The past 12 months.
That's a good point.
Thank you so much for coming in, David Taylor.
Thank you so much.
That is it for this edition of ABC Business Daily. We'll be back with another episode tomorrow. And in case you missed it, our last Fuelcast episode, for the next little while at least, is also in your feed before this episode. So you never miss an episode. Make sure you're following us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to send in a question, you can email abcbusinessdaily@abc.net.au. Catch you next time, DT.
See ya.